Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums in their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Today, we're joined by Glenn Dudley, lead vocalist of the Boston supergroup, The Long Wait. Yeah, that's right. We started you off with the song Your Plight from The Long Wait digital release entitled Demo, which is about a year old now. We have had the four other members of The Long Wait on the show, Stephen Rasteen, Jamie Sharapa, Mark McKay, Daryl Shepherd. God, when you say all those names together, it's like, talk about Boston rock royalty. You know, Jamie's been on the show three times, Daryl twice, Mark three times, but who's keeping track? We are, of course. Truth of the matter is I've been on the Long Wait train since day one, and they are one of the best bands in the Boston music scene right now. So I was very excited to talk to Glenn Dudley, not just about The Long Wait, but also his previous band, The Wrecking Crew, a band I've never got to see live, but heard a lot of things about, heard their demos, heard their records over the year. So it's a fun talk. So stick around, and we're going to play that for you shortly. I was deeply saddened to hear the news this week about the passing of Chris Parcelin. Chris has been a longtime supporter of the music scene in Boston as a music critic, interviewer, and a writer. He was always there for me whenever I had a band that needed a review or whatever. He also made this incredible film called Boys from Nowhere, which came out in 2016 and documented a great era in the Boston music scene in the late 70s, early 80s. Featured Willie Loco Alexander, The Real Kids, DMZ, The Neighborhoods. It was shown at a few screenings, and I had a private link to it. It was a great film, but unfortunately, it was held up in a legal battle. Chris and I spoke about this several times. He confided in me about a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and it didn't sound good. I wanted him to come on the show and tell his story, but he felt like his hands were tied up legally, and he couldn't. Sad. Regretfully, only days after Chris had passed, the guy who he had been fighting with over this release, the last 7 or 8 years, put the film up on YouTube. This, of course, pissed off a few people. The post on YouTube had no mention of Chris's name, which I'm sorry, but that is just not cool at all. And I can't really get into it much more than that, but this is my perspective. It was a classless move, and sad to see that. Chris didn't deserve that. All right, Chris Parcelin, really good guy, big music fan. Rest in peace. I remember the first few teaser videos that showed up on social media, which had Stephen Rasteen, Mark McKay, Jamie, and Daryl jamming in a practice space, and I was immediately excited. These are guys with deep roots in the Boston music scene. All four at one time were in the band Slapshot. Jamie, of course, was the bass player of SSD Control, and Daryl, a staple in the stoner rock scene, with bands from Roadsaw to Kind and everything in between. They then recruited Glenn, who they all knew from the late 80s hardcore metal crossover band Wrecking Crew, and The Long Wait was born. The first show The Long Wait played at Notch Brewery in Boston about a year ago, a little over a year ago, was epic. It seemed like everyone from the early Boston hardcore scene was there. It was a fantastic night. And they were amazing. Since then, they've done a bunch of shows and now planning to head back in the studio this summer to record some more. Pretty excited about that. So this was Glenn's turn to tell his story. And here I am with Glenn Dudley from The Long Wait. Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire show with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show, Glenn Dudley.
Hello, how are you guys?
How you doing, man?
Doing good, doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I don't usually, I encourage people to do early morning interviews, but not usually this early. But it's good because I've been up since like 5:30, so.
Yeah, my schedules have changed as I gotten older. I seem to go to sleep earlier and wake up earlier now, so.
It's really funny, all the people that have been in the music industry forever, like I've been in it for my whole life, and you've been doing this since you were young. It's like we all can get up early now, but I remember in the old days, you couldn't get anyone to get up before like noon or whatever, you know?
No, not at all. And it's funny too when you say that, like even playing in the band, it's like I joked last week about how like direct support is the new headliner. Like we'd rather play earlier in the show to go home early, you know, get done. We're all
Oh, I
tired.
have that problem, man. I can't hang with the late hours anymore, man. I love the
Yeah, it's
early
tough.
shows. You know what I wanted to ask you, because we only met recently, and I've known about you for a while, but I never really got to know you. Are you from the Boston area originally?
I am a little my background. I was born and raised in Jamaica Plain. Grew up pretty much on the same street until I was about 17 when I moved out. Right up by the old Green Street Station, right off Glen Road by up by I was sort of closer to the Franklin Park side of Jamaica Plain by Sigourney Ave. Grew up there, went to Jamaica Plain High School, went to Boston Public Schools, was a product of the 70s and 80s in Boston. After all, I did all my stuff. I got married, moved to Jersey for 7 years, came back to Boston, got married again, moved to Oregon, and now I'm back here. So that's a quick synopsis, but I am originally from Boston all my life. Jamaica Plain, pretty much, JP.
Yeah, and if you people listening from other parts of the country and the world, JP is right in Boston. It's like a neighborhood in Boston next to Roxbury, and just it's a great area. Now it's like even better than it ever has been. I like it there. I have friends that live there. I like going there. There's cool art, record stores, place to eat, everything. It's a good area.
Yeah.
Now, when you were growing up, did you start listening to music as an at an early age when you were in Boston?
Well, luckily, I'm the youngest of three brothers. So I had two older brothers growing up, about 4 and 6 years older than I am. So I was introduced to music at a fairly early age. You talk like the Beatles, White Album, stuff like that, The Clash, Elvis Costello, you know. I got into the scene itself probably the mid 80s. Started going to shows in the early 80s, probably. It was a little bit of a late bloomer into the scene itself. But as far as music goes, I remember being exposed to everything from my mom listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire and George Benson, to my brothers listening to, like I said, the White Albums, you know, even like the first Steve Miller album, stuff like that. I was always exposed to something different. But I remember the first thing that really latched me in was definitely Elvis Costello. For some reason, that was like my first real introduction into it, pulled me into that whole alternative thing, kind of.
That
It was
was
a
going to be
great
my
much.
next question. So Elvis
Yeah.
Costello and the Attractions, right? That was his
Yes.
first band. Yeah, he was
Yes.
part of that whole stiff.
Well, it's funny to say that because a lot of people don't know. Sorry, I'm just opening the window real quick. A lot of people don't know that Elvis Costello and the Attractions, the first album, was actually the Huey Lewis and the News backing band. The Attraction didn't come to fruition until the second album, This Year's Model. That's when the actual Attractions were actually played on the album. On the first, it was all studio musicians on the first album, on My Aim Is True. So that's an interesting little fact about Elvis Costello and the Attractions. So there were no, if you look at the first album, it was just Elvis Costello. It wasn't Elvis Costello and the Attractions. So
Okay, I'm not
it
gonna
was an
lie
interesting.
to you. I didn't ha didn't don't have that first record, but now you got me curious because I did not know that. So he
Yeah.
had studio musicians back him up on the first record, which is not that unusual for that time. That was probably like
No.
77.
Yeah, 78, 77 is when he recorded the first one, I believe. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was when it was actually, they ended up being Huey Lewis and the News.
That's really funny. I wouldn't expect someone like you that's into, you've played with very heavy bands to say Elvis, but Elvis is cool. I liked Elvis's music. He's always been relevant as the years go by. Was there anyone else in that time period that you were into?
Well, obviously, we were talking, it was funny. So it's funny you say that because when you think about this stuff, it's like you put on that first Nevermind the Bollocks album, the Sex Pistols. Everybody puts that first chord you hear on that album, it just hits that tone and like it resonates. But it's kind of ironic how now, when we look back at our heroes from that age, like if you look, I was talking to Jamie about this at practice last week, actually Sunday, how we put those people on such a pedestal, and that music was so visceral, and it just got this thing going inside of you. And then you look at them now, and you're like, oh, Malcolm McLaren dressed them? Actually, they were just normal people that he put ripped up clothes on? Come on, man, you just ruined everything for me. So, like all those, like the first Clash album. I remember listening to that first Clash album over and over and over. Just, giving enough rope. All that stuff was like, that sort of got me. And then going to like Newbury Comics when I was a kid, going to see like bands like The Cure in like 1985 or 84 at the Orpheum, stuff like that, the alternative stuff. I've seen the, bands like The Cult, more rocky stuff, but sort of had that alternative edge. Yeah, that sort of first like real like alternative hardcore stuff I remember hearing, to be honest with you, like the old, besides the old, DYS SSD stuff, but the relevant stuff that was still happening was like, Agnostic Front, when Slapshot first started, Dag Nasty, stuff like that. And I remember just hearing that music, and it just brought up this emotion that was everything that was frustrating from my past was coming out in this music. And it was like this release for me. It was just it, and I remember just hearing that, and then the scene sort of sucks you in. The scene to me happened more or less logistically. I was working at Ben and Jerry's in Kenmore Square. I remember hanging out in Kenmore Square late night, stealing my mom's car, going down, hanging on the steps, driving people home at 2 in the morning. And I was actually like straight edge, kind of wannabe straight edge at the time, not really, didn't really know a lot of people. But I worked at Ben and Jerry's in David's Cookies, which was right on the corner of Brookline in Kenmore Square, right where, right next to Store 24. And it was just kind of like the hangout. I worked with a kid named Jerry Backstrom, rest in peace, great friend of ours, passed away too early, but he was an old Wrecking Crew roadie, but they used to call it Glenn and Jerry's because it was sort of the place
That's
where
good.
the weather was crappy, everybody would come hang out. They'd all sit around and we'd let them give them free ice cream, whatever. And from there, you just sort of got involved in the street, the scene. Where's the party? What are we doing afterwards? Where are we hanging out? It just sort of grew. I think it was a logistical thing. And we talk about this now a lot with a lot of my old friends. It was kind of the place where everybody who had something going on, like in their household, mentally, just it was sort of a meeting place. It was therapeutic for us. We all had a common thread.
Right. I definitely want to get into that period 87 to 90 because you mentioned I was really into what was going on during that scene and the bands you mentioned. But before that, let me ask you a question. You said you had two older brothers. Did either one of them play or did you play any instruments when you were young, or would you just went right to becoming a singer, a lead vocalist of a band? Or did you pl ever play anything?
Besides my mom giving me a recorder when I was a little kid, my brother had a bass. He wanted to play bass. He played a little bit. I bought a bass here. I had a guitar there. I never really played it. And it's something I've tried over the years. The singing thing, I'm sorry, I'm not going to call myself a singer. The vocalist thing, the vocalist thing sort of just, it just came upon me. So, right. I never played an instrument, tried a little bit, wanted to play, owned a couple of guitars in my teens and so forth. Just never, I think it must have been the ADD. I just don't have that, I start concentrating and I lose focus. You got to have hyper focus to really be disciplined at that. And something that never really came to me in a way. It's funny because Ralph, Keith, and John came into Ben and Jerry's and asked me to sing for the band. That's how it happened. They said,
Oh,
hey, do
okay.
you want to
So the
sing for the band?
first, so Wrecking Crew was your first band, 'cause I was going to ask you if you played with anyone else. So you were at Glenn and Jerry's. I'll call it Glenn and Jerry's now.
Exactly.
So you're at Glenn and Jerry's. It's like, what year did you graduate from high school? Because you said you went to Jersey, but that must have been later,
No,
right?
I was in Boston. I didn't go to Jersey until 97, till well
Okay.
after Wrecking Crew.
So
Until
did you
after
go to,
Wrecking, I
were you still in high school when you were at Ben and
No,
Jerry's?
I was actually so I was a late starter because I was born in 68, so I was behind in school. I had a messed up situation in 7th grade. I went to Latin Academy, got, was sort of overwhelmed, got stayed behind a year. So I was late in school. So I ended up dropping out of high school in like 84, 85, got my GED, and then I went right to college. And that was sort of when Wrecking Crew was happening. So that was like around the time I was at UMass Boston at the time. I was going to a school called ACC UMass before I dropped out, which was like another course to college. It was related to UMass. So basically, I was like, all right, I'm too old. I'm still in high school. I dropped out, got my GED, went to college. And that's when Wrecking Crew sort of got signed to the label, and Wrecking Crew was happening. So I had a good excuse to drop out of college because we were going on tour. So that's sort of I was sort of like in transition. I was about 18 going on 19 when Wrecking Crew started. But right, that wasn't the first version of Wrecking Crew. There was a version of Wrecking Crew before me where Ralph was a singer, and they played, I think, two or three shows.
Ralph DeNunzio, did I say that
Yeah,
right?
he was a singer. No, I'm sorry. Brian Dalton was the singer, I believe. Brian Dalton. I don't know if you know. He's an old punk rocker from the scene. He actually sang, and they played maybe two or three shows. They had a couple of flyers out there, but I don't think they ever recorded anything. And sort of it went from there into when everybody met John Darga. John Darga is from up Nyack, New York area, upstate New York. Not really upstate, but midstate. And he was a BU student at the time. We met through the scenes, so that's how we all met.
You mentioned Dag Nasty, Slapshot. I know, now you're playing with guys that were all in Slapshot. How did you find out about those bands?
It's funny too, because I had a childhood friend, Kevin Craddock, who's still a friend of mine, who was just with him a couple of weeks ago. Great guy. He had an older brother also, and they were into bands like Squirrel Bait and Minor Threat, obviously, and all those bands. And that's when I first was introduced to that. And it was sort of a natural progression. And once you hear those bands, you kind of want to hear what's attached to those bands, Going to Newbury Comics back in the days when you flip through albums and you'd see, oh, this album, Dag Nasty, you really didn't know much about it because there wasn't much out there unless you had a friend who had the tape or the album. So you'd grab the album or you hear from a friend and your one friend would have the album and you'd go over his house. But I think it just grew from hearing those bands. I mean, obviously, the Bad Brains. When everybody hears the Bad Brains for
Yeah.
the first time, it's almost like a religious experience. Like
Did you go?
literally, I remember seeing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you go and see any of those bands play when they
Oh
came through
yeah.
town?
I didn't see Dag Nasty with Dave, unfortunately. I saw Dag Nasty with Pete at the
Pete
Rat.
Kortner.
Yes, I saw that. I've seen the Bad Brains multiple times. I used to remember first time I saw them was probably 86, probably. So it was a little after kind of their we're retiring, coming back, retiring, coming back phase. But they were still one of the, that was the band where you were so excited to
Eye
see. I
against the
remember
eye
it.
with the quickness. Yeah, that era
Oh
was good
yeah.
too. Yeah.
I remember that I was at Glen and Jerry's and I pulled open the Phoenix. I still remember this to the day. And I opened up to the channel listening and I was like, Bad Brain. I still remember the feeling I got when I saw that. Like, and I think I actually got kicked out of that show during Gangrene. So that kind of sucked too.
So you were working in Kenmore Square and you met, who did you meet, like John first or Keith Bennett? It was, let's see, it's Keith Bennett, D John Darga, Ralph, and Tess, Raybeck, T
Taz
Tess,
was, yeah, Taz was our drummer,
Taz,
but the
Raybeck.
original, when I started, the original drummer was EK. Eric Combs, EK, Sick of It All,
Oh, wow,
you know
yeah.
EK?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my childhood friend. I grew up with EK. EK and I went to day, my mother taught us in daycare in Jamaica Plain. So we've known each other since we were basically 3 years old.
Wow,
Yeah,
cool.
so there's a history there. So we sort of got into the scene together also, in that aspect, sort of like introduced. And Boston also had a JP had a pretty big, I don't know if you know this band, Rick Berlin in the movies,
Oh
old
yeah,
80s
Rick
band.
Berlin's famous. Yeah,
Yeah,
definitely.
so yeah, we knew Rick back in the day. He lived in a house across from our high school. Like, Eric knew them. So Eric got into music early. Eric EK used to play for a band called the Eels,
Yeah.
out of Causeway Loft. With Craig Spalter, Gymnasio.
Famous
Okay, so
band.
Eric was playing, EK was playing for the Eels when we started Wrecking Crew, and we sort of asked him to play for us, and that's when he came to play for us for a couple of months. And that was right before he started playing for the Straw Dogs. So it
Right.
was a little bit of a history there. So I forget what the original question was. Sorry, I think I got sidetracked there.
Well, just how you got in the band. You said that they came in and they recruited you.
Oh yeah. So funny you asked that, because I think originally it wasn't even music that brought us all together. It was the steps at Kenmore. It was Stairs by Pizza Pad. Like, you would sit there, someone would come up, they'd sit down next to you, you'd start talking, they look like you look like, and so you'd start, then their friend would come up. Okay, where are you going? We're going down to the river. Let's go down the river, hang out for a bit. All right, let's go down the river. And that's how it all happened. It really did. It was like, and it just sort of like snowballed in a way. And it was a, I guess it was a good time for the scene too, because the scene had been through a little bit of a lull, I guess. There was the big, SSD, big negative, all that really original seminal hardcore stuff that happened in the early to like, early mid 80s. And it just sort of was, it sort of dwindled. And like Slapshot wasn't around. There was really not a lot of hardcore, like punk rock around. It's sort of like, and there was a need for it. There were people that were waiting for it to happen, sitting on the stairs waiting for a show that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, this
And
is
I
when
think
all the
we
hardcore bands went metal there for a while, 85,
sort of,
86.
no, but yeah, you could say that 100%. And it's sort of like it had mixed reviews, and I think people were still looking for that, that grassroots, that guttural kind of feeling. They didn't want it polished. It was a rough time. Think about the mid 80s. Think about the Reagan era, like just. Think of Massachusetts. Remember when everything was dirty? Remember when New York was still dirty? Yeah,
I lived there, yeah.
it was wonderful back then. I loved it in some ways.
I was at Giant Records when I remember I heard you guys for the first time. There was a two cassettes, I think, and I think I got the second one. And it wasn't long after that that I went to Cal back to California. I went from LA to New York back to LA. And I knew Roadrunner was I mean, I hate to say it this way, but I mean, when I left Roadrunner and I started Giant, there were rumors that Roadrunner wants to start a punk label now. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Why didn't they do that when I was there? But then John Bello started Hawker. And how did you guys get on Hawker's radar?
I think it was once again a timing thing. That was when In Effect was, remember In Effect, the hardcore label? They were scooping up all the New York bands. They were the big label. They were like the label that all the hardcore bands. And that was a new thing, from being in the industry. Like, signing hardcore bands wasn't really a thing. It started becoming a thing when all that New York stuff started becoming up to the top. And I think we got caught up in that mix. And I think Hawker and Roadrunner wanted to compete with In Effect. So they signed Rest in Pieces, Token Entry, Us, No For an Answer. That was their first four signings. I mean, not to speak ill on anybody, that I don't know what resources they were given, but the promotion wasn't the best, The tour wasn't the best. They were generous with the money at the time. It was a very, I was like, wow, you're going to give us this much money to record in 1988, 89? Sure, we'll take it. Oh, we got to pay it back. Damn it.
I remember that time because I was hanging out at the CBGB Hardcore Matinee every Sunday, and Bella was always there too. So I remember when that whole scene was happening. It was right like 88. You guys were there pretty early on when that second wave started coming along. The split cassette that you did with No For an Answer, was that before or after Balance of Terror? I couldn't figure that out.
So that was after Balance of Terror. That was actually a live recording. It's all four bands, all four. It was a showcase show at CBGB's that happened. It was a Token Entry, No For an Answer, Rest in Pieces, and Us. And they were going to do a live take, pull songs for live recording and put them on the album, is what they did. The unfortunate thing about that recording is, I think three or four songs into our set, John Darga's amp blew. So we only had those songs to choose from. We didn't have
Oh.
any other songs to choose from. So it was kind of unfortunate. But that was the live recording that was set up by them, recorded at CBGB's. It was a
Right.
show recording kind of thing.
I wasn't
So that was a.
I don't think I was at that show, but I did go to a bunch, Token Entry. I used to see my friend Bill played with them for a little while, and I used to go see those guys, Ernie and all those guys. They were really cool. All right, so that whole scene was happening. Why do you think things didn't really progress? You said the promotion was kind of a problem because you guys were pretty big in Boston.
Yeah, Boston. So we toured after that album. So going back real quick to, I think, why we got signed, back to the question of like how we got signed by Hawker. I think we immediately got along and meshed with all those New York hardcore bands. Like the minute we played with them, we had kind of the same sound. People would think we're a New York hardcore band. We had a little bit of a metal edge,
Yeah.
you know, we had that aggressive style. And we played a couple of shows with like Raw Deal, Sick of It All, and it sort of just we had an odd history of playing New York. So our first see just to backtrack a second, our first CBGB show, we played with Uniform Choice and Warzone opened up for us in New York. So just put it that way, not a good start. But and then like one of the show after that, 24/7 Spies opened up for us when they were big at the time. So we had a weird history. We played that Agnostic Front live at CBGB's album, the first one I did. We opened that show. We played that show. That show was insane. You know, and New York at the time was still going through a little bit of like a Boston thing. It wasn't like copacetic. It wasn't roses. So we sort of bridged that gap a little bit, I think. We got the Boston, New York scenes kind of back together with the Sick of All. I remember personally, I booked the first Sick of It All show in Boston. It was at Green Street Station. It was Absolution, Sick of It All, I think Us and Us, or maybe Raw Deal, but it was a huge show. It was like 101 degrees at Green Street Station, packed place, like water dripping from the ceiling, water on the floor. It was insane. So we had that connection with New York. And I think that's back to saying that's how we got signed to Hawker. John was very New York. You know how Hawker got its name, right?
I
That's how John
don't.
Bellows said hardcore, Hawker, Hawker. Yes, that's what I heard.
I do remember John
Because he
Bello
said
being,
hardcore.
yeah, I do remember John Bello being quite the character, and he had the heavy accent. There's no doubt about that. So in 1990, you had that demo that was really
So back
good,
to the
but
question you asked me about.
was that the question I asked about the 1990 demo?
Okay, so you're asking that. Well, I remember the question now. Well, it was hard too. I mean, promoting hardcore back then or punk rock, it wasn't as big as it is now. It still was underground and blossoming when you think about it. So, how do you promote a hardcore band or punk rock band from Boston who's regionally big, yes, but outside of Boston, nobody knows them? So we toured. We did a, it was probably like a 3 week tour. Played about 16 shows, not a lot for 3 weeks. Now, in today's standards, which they play pretty much every day. But back then, you have to think, we went from Boston to Seattle to LA and then back to Boston in 3 weeks. And we played 16 shows. So things were a little more spread out back then. Shows weren't promoted that well. We had a mix here and there, I don't know. But like I said, how do you promote a low-level hardcore band from Boston back then? How are you successful? I think I'm not blaming a record label on this. It's also, if you talk about why didn't it work out in the long term, how many bands have good second albums? Think about it.
Couple of things that you
Percentages,
just mentioned.
about 20% of the bands have a good second album out there.
Yeah,
It's hard.
I can relate to what you're saying because I was on trying to promote bands. You know, I had Uniform Choice and Dag Nasty and Verbal Assault and
People like
Government
who?
Issue. You know, and these bands all were they're more popular now than they were then, I can tell you right now. Like, look at Dag Nasty, for example. They came out of the box really hard, but then when Smalley left, Wig Out, people were like, yeah, this is okay, and Field Day. That's yeah, now everybody wants the Field Day record. They're like, oh, that was one
Oh,
of the
yeah.
greatest records. And back then it was kind of like, oh no, this is punk's over now, hardcore's over, we're moving on. You guys, to me, were more leaning towards the metal side of things when I heard you. That's what I thought about Wrecking Crew. I thought you, even though you played with Slapshot and bands like that and you kind of fit into that scene, I heard more of a metal sound. And that's not an insult at all, you know, because I like
Oh
metal
no,
and
none
hardcore.
taken.
It was
It's
years
go ahead, sorry.
later. I know the band kind of ref I mean, I don't know if they continued or without you or reformed, but I know there was another version of the band, but it really didn't go anywhere. But Bridge Nine years later ended up putting out 26 songs on
Yeah.
the I think it was live. Was it all live? A lot of it was live, or was it all live?
No, it's actually all re it's pretty much all recorded. I think there is a live at WERS set we did back in like 88 or 89. But the most of it is basically our unreleased recordings. It's
Yeah.
the early recordings, the late demo, Balance of Terror, anything that's unrecorded and unreleased. We basically just a compilation of all our stuff, basically, and the ERS live recordings
Yeah,
at
there
the end.
was
It's
a
basically a
live
set of my
EP.
stuff.
I got confused because I know there was a live EP, but I guess that was just, I don't think it was ever
Yeah.
released, but it was floating.
No. Only live stuff I believe was the CBGBs, the Free For All, and the ERS thing on the re-release of Balance of Terror, basically. And then also Ice Cream re-released Balance of Terror also. I don't know if you know that in Germany. They had a re-release of the original
Yeah.
original album too. So
Did
that
you
was
play
fairly recent.
before? Of course, we're going to talk about the long wait in a minute, but did you play with any other bands after Wrecking Crew?
Yeah, I had a couple of low-level things. I played in a band called Pound with this guy named Kevin Craddock, Craig from the Eels, this guy named Chuck Aceto, and Maze Georges. He played in a couple of bands. I played in the band Diecast for like 3 months.
Oh,
Remember
wow.
Diecast, the metal band?
Yeah.
Jeremy Wooden and the guitarist Nassim. I played with them. I actually have a demo on DAT downstairs somewhere with them. I played with them for a couple months. Played in a band called Burn It with Dom DiBenedetto from For the Wars. He plays in the Cro-Mags now. I played with Slapshot for a while, Dom, the guitarist. He's played in a bunch of bands, and EK. And most recently, when I was in Portland, I actually played with Dom again. Dom was living in Portland, so I played with him and this guy named Orion and Scott. We had a band called Blast Point. Played a couple of shows. We actually did a little run with Slapshot all the way up to Bellingham, Washington, and back. So it played out there for a little bit. So I've been, I can't say I've been 100% active throughout the years, but been dipping my toe in the past couple of years more than I have. So,
I think there was
fairly
a
active.
Wrecking Crew did reunite around 10 years ago and do a benefit show, right?
Yeah,
Like
no,
two.
we the last show we did in Quincy for the marathon bombing. We did this show at that was right before I moved to Oregon. I think it was 2013, 2014, I think. We played a show in Quincy. Yes.
Right. Yeah, I
That
do
was the
remember
last
hearing about
album, I
that.
believe.
Now, you mentioned that you toured with Slapshot. So is that, I don't know what version of the band you took when you went on tour with them, but
Well,
did
yeah,
you
I was like,
like
oh,
it's
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Steve, was it with Stephen and Mark or?
No. It was the more recent version. It was with Dom, Ryan Packer, and Corey, the drummer, and Choke. This was back in 2019, 2018,
Oh,
when we
okay.
played. Well, that was with my band in Oregon. As far as touring with Slapshot, I've roadied for Slapshot back in the day a couple times, but I don't think Wrecking Crew. It's funny because Wrecking Crew and Slapshot didn't play together that much. I can't even honestly remember a time when we played together, maybe once or twice. It was odd.
But you knew all these guys. You knew Stephen and Mark and Jamie. Did you know Jamie too back then?
Yeah. I didn't know Jamie. Funny story about Jack is that one of my girlfriends, I met this girl when I was with EK in Faneuil Hall in like probably 85. And I met her at Sweet Stuff, the candy store, and she was working with Jack's wife at the time. So I ended up going out with this girl and then hanging out with Jack and his wife, doing like double dates. And this is like 19. I had no idea who I'd never met Jack before. We ended up going to Rhode Island to see the Adolescents with them in like 85. I remember I was like kind of starstruck in a way. You know what I mean? This is
Yeah.
me being, I wasn't even, Wrecking Crew wasn't even like a baby at the point. It wasn't even a thought. So I was like, wasn't even really part of the scene. But I remember like this like old hardcore guy and being like this little kid in the back seat, you know? It was pretty funny, but yeah, no, I knew of that. I didn't know Jamie. The older guys were sort of so that was the older guys, Pat Rafferty. I knew Pat Rafferty being around. I knew of all that to Dickie Barrett hanging around because hanging out at the bars and stuff, they'd always be around. You'd know them, wouldn't necessarily hang directly with them, but you'd be at the same parties, same bars, and so forth. You'd hang out together. But the Slapshot guys, I was pretty close with. I actually, like I said, I roadied for them a couple of times. You know, Steve, we were pretty close. Mark actually put out the first Wrecking Crew EP on
Right.
Vortex Records,
Yeah.
so we were close that way. So we were all very, very good friends with Slapshot back then.
Forgot to mention that. Yeah, Mark, you did work with Mark. And he was at Newbury back then too, right?
Yep, in the Rip
Yeah.
Comics.
Yeah. So there was a, you know, I was following along with the early days of the long wait because coincidentally I'd had Jamie and Al on my show, and Jamie told me, you know, we're starting to talk about doing some stuff here with Steve. It was after Slapknot. I'm talking to Steven and Mark about doing stuff. So I kept hearing the rumors, and they were posting the clips. And then there was a rumor that Keith Bennett was going to be their singer. When did you enter the discussion, and did they contact you, and how did that all come together? Because you live out at the Cape, right?
Yeah, currently living in West Barnstable. Wife and I bought a house about 3 years ago, about 4 years ago now, right in the middle of the pandemic. Actually, smartest thing we ever did, seeing the rents in Boston now. But yeah, I'm in the Cape now. But it started, so basically, Slapknot was happening. Obviously, I'm still close with Keith. We talk all the time. Keith told me that Slapknot wanted me to, you know, come in and have to do a song during the Slapknot show. I was like, sure, to be great. So I did the song, came up and practiced a couple of times, did the song. Keith actually did start jamming with them, I remember. But that's right when he was doing the Casket Rats. Then he got the Death Ray Vision thing going on. And he had a lot of stuff going on. He couldn't really handle it bandwidth-wise. And he, I guess they were not, they saw me play with them, so I could still do it a little bit. Keith sort of probably suggested me. I'm assuming Keith might have suggested me. Steve contacted me. It was Christmas. 2022 around Christmas, he's like, "Hey, we're thinking you want to come up and give it a shot." I'm like, "Sure." They sent me like three or four songs. I remember being on vacation during Christmas and like writing lyrics to the songs and just going up, and it just sort of worked. Like musically and just the whole vibe. Like the guys are just good guys. You know, there's no agenda. There's no everything's on the table. No one's looking to get famous. No one is looking to get rich. You know, there's no attitude. We just want to get out there, you know, and do what we do as an outlet, and hopefully people enjoy it, you know, and make some music.
I think Stephen Rostein
It's
wants.
kind of like,
I was gonna say, I think Stephen Rostein wants to
what's that?
secretly be famous. You know, he's got the famous rock star
Oh, don't we all? I
poses.
mean, we all want to be rich. Come on. I mean, I wouldn't mind me. I think one of our main goals is hopefully, you know, maybe get overseas. You know, that's one thing I've never done as for playing music. I've never played Europe yet.
Oh, I
I have
think you
not.
guys
I've
would do
played
great
cross
there.
country. I've played. Yeah, we'd love to. We'd love to, but I think we need to put something out. We need to put something out first.
Okay, there was a little, it was cutting out a little bit, and I thought, did you say that they sent you the music and then you did the lyrics, or did you write the lyrics, or were the
Yeah.
lyrics?
I write all the lyrics for this band. Yes. I've written all the lyrics pretty much. Like Wrecking Crew, I probably wrote a third of the lyrics. The lyrics was a combined effort in Wrecking Crew, but after Wrecking Crew, I've pretty much written all my lyrics, except maybe except any one or two songs here or there. But yes, I do write all my lyrics now, 100%. And the writing process is awesome now because I'll plug it, but I have an app called Spire on my phone, which basically I can record practice and records it pretty well. I could bring that recording home, sit in my bathroom, and record multiple like vocal tracks over it and mess with the levels on my phone and get it to work. And just so I can work songs out, it's so much easier now. So to your point of living on the Cape, it still works. You know, I can still make it, you can still practice, you know, you can still make it work. It's definitely, it does miss a little bit by not like, obviously, us being older, we're not going to practice two, three times a week. It's not going to happen. Nobody has that kind of time. But the one thing you do miss is that live feel practice, you know, just getting that whole, you know, that whole vibe down. And I think honestly, after practice Sunday, we just had a good run of shows and good run of practices. It's taken about a year, but we're finally getting there. That's how hard it is, you know, to have that feel on stage and have that vibe on stage. Not to say we've played bad shows, but I think, you know, having that stride, getting our stride going.
Oh, I would not say I thought the two shows I saw were great. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but I wanted to talk to you about the
Thank you.
demo because I remember, well, you guys call it a demo. It's not really a demo. You know,
yeah,
it's
five songs. You did a small album.
Yeah, you did it in 1 week and you did it at New Alliance. At New Alliance with Ethan DeSalt. And I remember Ethan saying to me when I saw him one day, and I told the rest of the guys this when they were on the show before, he said, these guys wanted to hurry up and do this. If I could have spent more time with them, it would have been so much better. And then I heard it and he played it for me. I'm like, are you fucking crazy? This sounds amazing. How much better could you possibly have made it than this? You know, but you know, engineers are, they always think, you know, more time.
Yeah.
He has a producer's mind, 100%. You know, Ethan, but was that experience good for you? Like, obviously from what I hear, you guys went in there and you really didn't waste any time in the studio at all. You just nailed it.
Yeah, I think that's a true testament to us, like being like doing it before, like knowing what we have to do, like being, as Joe, quote unquote, professionals, I'll call us semi pros, but like knowing like it's go time. Like you're in the studio, it's time to concentrate. We know what we had to do. Let's knock it out. Obviously, I listen to the recordings now and I'm like, okay, this could have been better. That could have been better. This is different now because we went in after, think about, we started playing live together first in January. I think we went in the studio in March or April. So that was only after 3 months of playing together, basically 3 months of playing together, period. So yes, Ethan, working with him, awesome guy. Super like not pushy. Low-key guy, easy to work with, laid back, but on point, knows what he's doing. And to that point, we're going back in the studio with him June 1st. So we got some new music coming out. So to pump that one, we also talked about it. It's funny you say that about what he said, because I reiterated that point to the guys about a month ago. We were talking about going back in the studio. I said, even Ethan said, he said to us, if I had more time with you guys, I really would, we could have done something really good with this. Not that it was bad, like you said, but you know, we could have brought it somewhere else. So, and this time we're going to take our time. We got 2 days booked. We're not going to rush it to finish it in 2 days. We're going to do what we can in 2 days. And then after that, work from there. So we can actually we want to try to get something, even if we do it ourselves, pushed out on vinyl for this. So we'll see.
Vinyl is good. I know Derek, Mark and Steven and Jamie weren't really playing a lot the last few years, but Daryl Shepherd, he's like a machine. He's been like playing nonstop. So having him around definitely I see the band. When I saw the band twice, and by the way, you said you didn't think you were very good. That first show at Notch Brewery was unbelievable, man. I don't know. I mean, you guys just blew the roof off the place. Plus, the crowd, I remember being there and like, everybody in this place is like in the Boston music scene. It was incredible.
Well, that was a family, that was a reunion. Yeah. That was like a reunion to me. It was almost overwhelming. It was like, it was almost like the stairs at Kenmore again. It was like, Sam, this guy, that guy, Rob Phelps. I mean, what's going on here? You know, it's like everywhere you turned, it was someone like that you hadn't seen in 20 years. It was beautiful. That's what it's all about. You know, seeing these people and seeing their lives now and how, you know, their kids coming to the shows, you know, and like what they've been through and they're still there. They're still seeing people who had problems in the past and now looking at them now, what they build their lives into. Also, it's a beautiful thing. The scene is a beautiful thing. And it's honestly something that will be with us, I think, the rest of our lives, you know, almost more so than our family in some ways, you know, connection wise, you know, you think how seminal everything in this scene and this whole production was in our life.
Yeah, and there was no letdown at all. The second time I saw you guys at the Middle East, I thought you guys were with verbal assault, right?
Yes. I want to say we could do better. I don't think we played bad, to reiterate. I think that as being in the band, I think I put ourselves under a microscope, as most people do. Like I feel there, I see every intricate little part of it, you know, as most people don't. And I put it under the microscope, and I shouldn't as much, but thank you very much for the compliment. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm a big fan. It's kind of unfair asking me because It was like love at first listen for me when I heard the original, when I heard the demo, because I got to hear it before, I got the inside scoop from Ethan. He let me said, "You want to hear it?" And I'm like, "Of course I want to fucking hear it." And he played it
Nice.
for me. And I was like, "Wow." And the first thing I remember saying was, "Daryl's guitar sound is insane, man." And he was like, he looked at me and like, "I can't believe how good he is, man." It's like he's just such, and the whole band is, we're dealing with some pros here, man. Jamie Sciarrapa, I mean, this is a really good band,
Yeah. To that point, like even like he's Daryl's plug and play. It's so like, Daryl, we need a little solo. We need a fill here. He's like, all right, I got it. Solo key just throws it right in there. It's there. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, he doesn't need much time to do his job. He's really good. That's what everyone says about him.
No.
It's your turn, Daryl. Okay. Oh, I'm done. It's like one take, Daryl. You guys have a lot of shows coming
Exactly.
up. And you're doing more recording that you mentioned. And one thing I was going to ask you, and you kind of answered it, you said you'd like to go to Europe. And I think that's a pretty good goal for this band.
Love to, would love to. Would love to play, play the West Coast too, and it's all, you have to think about it too. It's all, we all have lives. We all have jobs, so it's not like this is our mainstay. So we have to make all that work within our lives. And hopefully someday we'll be offered that, we'll work towards that. But, we have to make it work, personally. Like, can we all do it at that certain time? Do we have, the bandwidth, the vacation time, whatever we need to have. But, yeah, I it's, love to go to Europe, love to play wherever. We do have a bunch of shows coming up. We are this Friday to plug it, sorry. Friday we're playing Salem at Kodo with Spiller, record release from Glenn from Gangrene. I don't know if you guys have heard this, ever the Spiller EP yet?
Yeah, Chris was on the
Good
show
stuff.
actually, Chris Pearson. I loved the band.
I
Really
like it a
good band.
lot.
Another all-star
Yeah,
band.
very
It's got
Husker Du-ish. Totally.
between the Long Wait and Spiller, you're gonna have like the history of about 20 bands in one room that night.
You got great stuff. I mean, even like with the resurgence of Tree, bands like Sonic Boom, you got, Catching Hell, all these bands sort of coming up now. And so it's funny because you talk about being in the studio with Ethan, going back to that, we were in the studio and Duncan was actually, he has a studio and that's in New Alliance.
Yeah.
And he was there the day we were recording and he sort of poked his head in and gave us this like really like, who the hell are you guys look? Like, it was like, we're recording a demo. He's like, really? Sort of like, what the hell's going on? But
Yeah,
now
that
we're
was
all,
pretty.
now everybody's playing together. It's like a new scene, kind of. It's like the old guy scene coming
The
together. I like it.
pandemic seemed to like encourage a lot of people, like, we got to go out there and do this now. You never know. We could have another thing happen like this. And it seemed like it woke a lot of people up. And all of a sudden, music now is just huge, man. I mean, things, I thought everything was dead like
Yeah.
10 years ago. And now all of a sudden, it's like, especially in Boston,
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Because that's when I was in Portland, that's when the pancake, I was living. I was thinking to myself, I was like, hardcore punk rock is never going to be the same again. Think of having a show at CBGB's during a pandemic. Like if the pandemic was actually blow up the way people thought it was going to, you'd never have a hardcore show again. Think of a pit during a pandemic. How much transmission of diseases in a pit there is.
Yeah, I think every time there was a show at the end of 2020, you heard that all these people got COVID. It was like, oh, okay,
Exactly.
let's go get
Exactly.
COVID. We'll just go to a show. One other thing I want to ask you, Glenn, before I let you go, is are you listening to any new stuff these days that you like, or what are you listening to? Do you listen on vinyl? Streaming. I mean, how do you listen to music and what are you listening to?
I do a lot of streaming, so I do a lot of Spotify. So right now, honestly, right now, listening. Let me see what I listen to. It's weird. I go through, so King Gizzard, Lizard Wizard, a little bit. I don't know if you heard of them.
Yeah.
King Gizzard, Lizard Wizard, kind of an odd, like kind of like trippy kind of band, but good. More like, honestly, more like country-ish stuff. It's kind of weird now, like Sturgill Simpson, stuff like that. Weird. So it's strange how you soften as you get older and you appreciate other music and how you correlate how other music isn't much different from the music you play, that you can actually make these connections as you get older. When you're younger, you just, you're like, oh, that stuff's so disgusting, get it away from me. And you get older, you're like, no, this stuff is probably just as rebellious as what I'm playing right now, you know, but you just got to listen to it. I'm in a big XTC kick right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The band XTC.
I love them. Making Plans for Nigel.
I'm in a huge kick with them right now.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. My God. Like, some of their songs, listen to their, like, if you listen to, as we go, it's funny because I was thinking this in my head. As we go back and talking about the Sex Pistols being very conformist and thinking they were nonconformist, listen to XTC's lyrics. You think that back when you were a kid, you always thought that band's out there, they're so soft, they're not against anything. Their lyrics are more defiant than Sex Pistols were. Listen to their lyrics. That's what we don't think about when we're young. We don't think about, like, you know, in here. We just think about what's out here, what feels.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's sung like Dear God. If you play that to people now and they look at the lyrics, they'd be like, what? You know, because it's such an anti, you know, religion song and everything, you know, and I think a lot of people would be like, wow, how did they get away with this, you know? And I remember when that came. I like XTC too. That was a good one, man. No one ever brings those guys up. Hey, man, thanks a lot for taking the time to come and
no
talk
problem,
to me.
Man.
I'm a huge fan of the band.
Great, great time.
You know, I'm a huge
Thank
fan
you
of
very
the
much.
Band,
I
and I will.
That. Like you said,
I'll be seeing you guys again soon, absolutely. So we'll catch up.
Show coming up in the summertime in Boston, so it's a pretty big one, end of June. I don't think it's announced yet. So we got Salem this week, we got Lowell next week, studio June 1st, and we're playing in Hall in July. So that's the lineup right now. But thank you very much. This was awesome. I had a great time talking to you.
I'll never miss a long wait show because Stephen Rostein. He makes sure to let me know every stinking detail of what's going on with the band. And then if I can't make a show,
love it. Awesome.
If I can't make a show, I actually feel bad because Steven, you know, I'm really sorry, man. I can't get to that show. Oh, come on. Thanks a lot,
Glenn. I don't
Glenn.
Feel bad. Love your support. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Let It All Burn, The Long Wait. That was fun. It was real nice getting to know Glenn Dudley. We'd only shook hands a few times at a few shows and didn't really know the dude very well, but I got to know him. He's a good guy. I have the feeling the best is yet to come from Glenn and The Long Wait. So stay tuned for that. All right. If you want to reach out to me, please write me at twistedrico@gmail.com. If you're a musician, songwriter, band, you have music, please send it. We also have an Instagram page, Facebook, Threads, YouTube, where you can actually watch the Zoom interview I did with Glenn Dudley. And there is a TikTok page where we put up a lot of clips from the shows and other cool stuff too. All right. And also, really important here, please consider supporting this podcast on our Patreon page, patreon.com/TwistedRico. If you can't afford to support us for even a buck a month, tell someone. Word of mouth organically is the way we've been able to grow this podcast, and let's keep it going that way. All you have to do is tell one person, check out Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. Check out that guy, Ricardo. He thinks he knows everything. Well, not really. You don't have to say that. But, you know, all right. Your support would be greatly appreciated is what I'm trying to say. All right, that's going to do it for this time. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive.